Few people can say they've tamed Mount Panorama, but this man certainly has.
Owned it.
And in doing so, he forever etched his name into Australian motor racing folklore. Jim Richards is a seven-time Bathurst champion. He's a member of the Supercars Hall of Fame, and he joins us as we count down to Sunday's Bathurst 1000. Jim, a big welcome to SEN.
Thank you very much. No, great to be on the show.
Hey, this time of the year, on the eve of Bathurst, pretty
Jim's
much,
time.
Does it get the blood pumping a bit, Jim? Does it stir you up inside? Not really.
Not after the amount of I've been up there. I think 47 years in a row I've been to Bathurst, so I'm just really, really looking forward to it, but I'm looking forward to it in my lounge. Over a nice cup of tea or maybe something a bit stronger, who knows?
Well, you have earned it. So I was going to ask you if there was any part of you at 74 years young that misses it.
No, not really. No, I sort of retired very quietly a couple of years ago during COVID, and I'm just laying back, drifting into the landscape and just enjoying it.
What's the secret, Jim? What's the secret to winning Bathurst? Because clearly you mastered it, seven-time winner, as we said earlier. It just can't be sheer speed. There must be more to it than that.
No, listen, you need to have... to be honest, you need to be in the right team. You need to have the right co-driver. And you need to be well budgeted to pay for the best equipment and the best guys working for the team. I mean, it's the old cliche, it's a team effort, it's not just the driver. I've been lucky enough to be able to go into all the teams I drove for in those seven wins were probably the best teams at the time. So, to get to that point, you've got to be recognised as a reasonable driver.
Speaking of secrets, Jim, we were talking about this before.
Before
you jumped on the line, I think the forecast is okay for Sunday. There's been obviously a heck of a lot of rain around the country. Now, you were known as the Rainmaster, or I think in some circles, the web-footed Kiwi. What was the secret for you to wet weather driving?
Well, I had a very, very simple way of going about it. I was often asked, what's the secret? And I say, well, listen, all you do is you think it's a dry track and it's a bit slipperier.
Fair enough. Hey, it's a kiss principle.
Because basically, I don't know why I go good in the wet. It's just I enjoy driving whether it's wet or dry, and I think you just got to make the best of any situation, you know.
Jim, I just wonder whether you're like the rest of us, and you flick the TV on the weekend. And you hope for it to be wet, or do you hope for it to be dry? What do you hope for as a former driver, someone who knows the mountain and knows what to expect? What do you want to see? What sort of challenge?
No, well, listen, I want to see a good dry race because more teams come into it then, rather than sort of relying on a result through the rain and the mist and the fog down Conrad. I mean, I can't think of anything worse now than going down Conrad straight at 290 kilometres an hour. And you can't see a foot in front of you.
How do you, I just want to ask this lateral one if I can. How do you go just driving A to B around town
after
having
that.
To stick to 40 k's an hour, 60 k's an hour? How do you adjust to just normal driving after having done what you've done?
Well, it's just real easy. I got my thrills in New Zealand growing up when. You got your license at the age of 15, and of course, young 15-year-olds got into all sorts of trouble in those days. So nowadays, I'm very, very set to cruise control and cruise along and let people pass me, and don't worry about chasing them and passing them back like you do on the track. So no, it's very easy.
Jim, of the seven, and I know I think the first three, you might have been a co-driver with the late and great Peter Brock. Is there one that stands out above the others for whatever particular reason of the seven that you perhaps hold most dear all these years on?
To be honest, no. I mean, the first three with Brocky, I didn't see the team at all during the year until, that one date in October that we went to Bathurst. So, I was a part of the team, but basically I was brought in to do a job, naturally, Pete, of the driving duties when he'd driven far enough. And it's just, crikey, I think that probably the most pleasing one was 2002, but it was the one that I didn't drive that well. There was Mark Scope and I drove that race together in his team. But he was up for the championship. If he finished the race with some good points, he won the championship. And, of course, we're trying to win Bathurst. So the co-driver doesn't want to do anything wrong in that situation. So I didn't drive as well as I could have, I thought, but at least we got home in one piece and won the race. So the 2002 was okay because it was a 10-year gap between when we last won it and when we won it in 2002. So that would never happen again. Co-drivers now and drivers are all guys, you know, under 20, well, under 30. When I won the 2002, I was 56.
Jeez.
Mm.
It doesn't happen these days.
No, 56, that's a good effort, isn't it? Who do you like this year? I mean, we've got Van Gisbergen and Wingcup. These sorts of guys are considered favourites. Where do you sit?
Well, I think I'm a bit the same. I think there's two teams that can be favourites, and that's Red Bull and Shell. But I'd love to see a wild card, like something like Erebus or someone jump out of the woodwork, because these days we're seeing young drivers in the race that a lot of people have never heard of. Mm. So they've got to get used to the fact that the old heroes are sort of fading away a little bit, and the youngsters are coming over and taking on, like it was when I was running. I was a youngster.
Jim, can we talk about, I mean, you referenced 2002 and the 10-year gap. Do you mind if we talk about 1992 and that winner's speech when you weren't exactly celebrated by the masses?
Yeah, sure, no problem. It's quite memorable.
It's become an infamous part of Australian motor racing history, hasn't it?
Memorable.
You didn't hold back.
Well, it's good to be remembered for something, isn't it?
For those that aren't aware, obviously we spoke about weather earlier, and weather intervened heavily, and there were a lot of casualties on the day, and crashes and cars off the road and so forth. What actually happened, and what caused that sort of controversy at the time?
Well, basically it was wet and dry all day, and the last I can't remember what lap it was on, to be honest, but we came around the circuit and we were leading. And we could see it was going to start raining, and it started to spit. And so I got a message from the pit, come in now, change tyres. And as I was coming down the straight, Neil Crompton was in the other GTR, and he was in front, but he was nearly a lap behind. And as we came down to pit road, I got a message, do another lap. Crompton's come in the pits, do another lap. So then I had to keep going on the slicks and do another lap, because Cromo was in there getting tyres when he wasn't told to. And so on that lap that I had to go around, there was an absolute deluge on top of the hill, and I clipped the concrete wall where Dick hit the rock and ripped a wheel off it. So and then we went down towards Conrad, and of course then slithered into the bank and got trapped with a whole lot of cars that were crashed there. So anyway, the race was stopped, and of course when the red flag comes out where the race is stopped, the result goes back to the last lap that all the cars passed the start finish line, and of course that was us, but we never made the next lap, and that's the regulations, and I didn't even know those regulations at the time, so I thought that I'd bugger the whole thing up and crashed and everything. So anyway, when we got down to the pit box, I said, we won the race. And of course, I recognised then what the rules were. But then when we got on the dais, of course, when you're on the dais, third place goes out first, then second place, and then the winners go out last. But by the time the presentation got round to us, which was we were last on the dais, of course, Dick Johnson had revved the crowd up and how crooked it was that he got beaten by a car that was crashed, couldn't get past the start finish, all these sort of things. And so when I went out, there was cans being thrown and all sorts. I mean, it was really funny looking back on it, to be honest.
Yeah, you can laugh about it now, I suppose.
Yeah, no, exactly. So when it came our turn to talk on the microphone, I just basically said that they're all a pack of assholes, and I'll be okay and keep going. But I didn't think that their they were very respectful of the winners.
Well, you would have been a percentage correct, Jim. Anyway, let's be honest. You would have been, we're not sure what sort of percentage, but you would have been a percentage correct.
No, exactly.
Yeah, my favourite was when Gary Wilkinson, the MC, Jim tried to defuse the situation, said you could maybe you could cool the crowd down with it with champagne bath. You just said, I wouldn't bother.
Well, exactly. Well, and that was 1992. Well, then, of course, in 2002, they asked me what I think of the crowd now. I said, they're very, very nice people.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, Jim, just a quick one on what we saw yesterday. There was a big crash up there yesterday.
Super 2.
Young Declan Fraser, his wheel nut come off. How scary would that be to lose just total control of your car at the top of the hill there?
No, that would be a thing that you'd rather not happen, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah. You haven't seen it?
No, not yet. No, okay. I've taped everything and... I was on the TV yesterday looking at my son Steve and his son Clayton are both racing in the Toyota 86 series. So I was keen to have a look at that and see how the boys were going.
I'm glad you mentioned Steve, Jim, because gee, the apple didn't fall far from the tree. There, he's a five-time winner himself.
Yeah.
No, exactly. No, he has made a fantastic career out of racing and. He's basically not retired, but he's not driving about supercars anymore.
Hey, can I just ask before we let you go, Jim, what car do you drive at the moment? There was someone texting in earlier asking if you've still got your black and gold JPS-sponsored BMW. It's been the greatest-looking car ever to hit bitumen. It was stunning, and it was quick. That's from Chris up in Batemans Bay.
No, yes, I've still got one of them. In the championship year, 1987, I drove two cars. In the championships, sort of the start of the series, I drove one car, then it was sold, and I got a brand new car. So I've still got one of those cars, but I didn't own it at the time. I bought it back, like years and years and years after, and restored it back to the original.
Jeez. Magnificent, Jim. It's so great to have you on the line. What a magnificent career you had, and you can kick back in absolute comfort, as you say now, and put the feet up. You've earned it. And watch the race on Sunday. Appreciate having your time today and your insights. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
No problem. Thanks, boys.
Cole tries to cross over heel, shakes her, and bangs down the triple. Beck Cole hits the three in the corner on paper coming in. They're the best team on the hardwood for the Rangers of old. The Flyers of today, the WNBL Championship is headed back to Melbourne Southside.
We heard that a lot last season. I get the feeling we're going to hear a lot of it again this upcoming season. The WNBL season tips off this weekend and the defending champs, the Southside Flyers, will open their title defence against the Bendigo Spirit on Saturday night. It's at Dandenong Stadium. Tip-off is 5 p.m. and, in fact, we have five double passes to give away. First in, best dressed. You want to get along? 1-300-736-736. No questions asked. The double passes will be yours. And you'll get to see this magnificent lady in action. She's a shooting guard for the Southside Flyers. Beck Cole. Beck joins us for Chemist Warehouse, the real house of fragrance this Christmas. Big welcome to you, Beck.
Thank you. Oh, that gave me goosebumps listening to that. I'm so pumped now.
Oh, happy to hear it. I was going to ask you how you're feeling with just a couple of sleeps to go before the real stuff gets underway again.
Oh, it almost feels like Christmas is coming early. I just can't wait to get out there in front of our fans again. Well, it's like that atmosphere that you play with. I've definitely missed that. I'm a quite passionate player, as you could probably see by that little commentary there. So I'm super pumped.
I'm taking a phone call from Ian Coots about Beck already. He said that she's one take. Well, anything she does in the membership media department, bang.
That's it.
Just nails it out. How's the pre-season form been outside of the marketing, Beck? How's your actual form been on the court?
Yeah, it's been really good. I say we're probably a team. We've got half of our core still there, but then we've also got some big new names that have come in. So I'm glad we've had about 6 weeks of pre-season, and each practice game that we've had, we're getting better. The chemistry is coming along, and I think we've sort of hit a good stage coming into our first game. So I'm super excited to see after a month like what our team is going to bring. It's going to be pretty exciting.
It's going to be a big night, isn't it, Beck? Because you're going to obviously unveil the championship banner prior to the game as well.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that drop. Our Tracy Browning, our GM, she sent us a picture, and I'm like, wow, that was almost a year ago that we did that and we won a championship and then we flew home and it was COVID. So we haven't really got to celebrate it. So it'll just be quite an honour to watch that, you know, be unveiled. And I think it'll get everyone super excited about, hey, let's bloody do that again.
Fresh tattoos, Beck? The whole team got the tattoos or what's happened?
Oh, I think if I came home with a flies tattoo, my parents would have probably killed me. But look, you never know. If we go round two, who never say never, right?
So, Beck, what does it mean? The COVID-enforced delay, of course, between season, what does that mean for you guys psychologically? I guess normally you'd be adjusting from going, I guess, from the hunter to the hunted, and there'd be more teams after you this weekend. That's what happens when you're on top of the pop, so to speak. So how have you adjusted going from, you know, what's going to be a pretty different season for you, I'd assuming, with everyone coming after you?
Yeah, I think I honestly sort of love it. I love pressure. I love when you're playing against, you know, great competition, because I feel like you can get the best out of yourself and the team. And look, this season, the playing field's pretty even. So every game, you're going to have to come out hard and ready to play, or, you know, you're going to get a whooping. So I think it's exciting. That was my first senior championship. So for me, even if a target is on our back, bring it on. I love that.
We're speaking to Rebecca Cole, shooting guard for the Southside Flies. And King, we've still got a couple of double passes to give away. If you want to get along to Dandenong Stadium on Saturday night, 5 o'clock, 1300 736 736.
Hey, Beck, tell us about some of the new acquisitions. Talk them up. Are they the reason why you can go back-to-back?
I think so. So in our five position, we have Abby Bishop now instead of Liz Cambage. And, every shot that she shoots, it's just going in. It's ridiculous. And she's so smart. She's played in Europe, WNBA. Like, she's a class act. And, you know, she's tall and athletic. And then in our point guard, we have Maddie Rocci instead of Leilani Mitchell now. And she's a young gun. So she's going to be exciting to watch. She's quick. She's athletic. And, you know, she's aggressive to the ring. And I think both of those suit, you know, our main core of still. There's Sarah, Jenna, myself, we got Kate Gaze coming in, Amy Clydesdale. It's just a super exciting team. And I heard we have five tickets. Come down. We're athletic. We're exciting to watch. So super excited to have the girls on board.
And has the preseason gone anyway? Does it feel like it's gone forever? And has the form been personally and, I guess, collectively?
Yeah, it was funny. We had our season launch the other day and Ian Coots was saying how, well, it's been a quick pre-season, and all of us girls rolled our eyes and started laughing. We're like, we haven't had a proper pre-season in 2 years. Yeah, 6 weeks feels like a bloody long time. But nah, it's been awesome. The vibe and the energy of all the girls, you know, we get along and we have a laugh, and I think that's the great culture that Cheryl Chambers has set. But you know, when it's go time, we know we need to switch on. So I think we're all just super excited to get game one underway and just see what, you know, lies ahead for us.
Beck, is a bit of a side issue, AFLW taking off at the moment and going gangbusters with the younger generation coming through and taking control or assuming control. Are you noticing that you're starting to lose a couple? Have you lost a couple of the up-and-coming stars from basketball? Have they found their way to AFLW, or is it not quite the threat we think?
Oh, I think it's definitely a threat that is there. You know, AFLW, it's an exciting game, and they have a great backing behind them for, I think now, you know, young girls are seeing this can really be a career for them. So, you know, it is sad to see some young basketballers who are, you know, probably up and rising to switch over to AFLW. Hopefully it becomes a part where they still, you know, they play both, and it's up to them to decide at the end, no, I love this sport more. But, yeah, no, I think it definitely is a threat. But I guess at the end of the day, we need to make sure that we're putting on a good show and we have a good league, and, you know, BA can back us so more people know what the WNBL is about. Because not only are we amazing players, go to Olympics, go to Comp Games, World Champs, win medals, but also great people and great role models. So, you know, to keep as many girls in the sport is just, you know, exactly what we would want.
Hey, Beck, the 3-on-3 in Tokyo for the Olympics was a bit of a novelty. You're a part of it. How was the experience?
Yeah, so unfortunately, we went to the Olympic qualifiers and just missed out.
Right.
We, yeah, our I guess, we weren't able to play the games for 2 years, whereas, you know, Europe and America were. So we weren't, you know, great on that stage, unfortunately, but we have the Commonwealth Games coming up next year, which is super exciting, and I can't wait for that. But I think the fact 3x3 was on the world stage and people saw it is now, it's going to grow, especially here in Australia. Not many people knew about it, but that game, I say, is like, you know, big bash of cricket. It's the rugby sevens. That's the vibe of 3x3. So I love it. It's aggressive. It's quick. You know, it's offensive and it's attacking, and that's sort of how I love to play. So it's just going to keep on growing, and it's here to stay, that's for sure.
Well, we wish you the best of luck for Saturday night, and finally it gets underway. I can hear the excitement in your voice. No doubt you've been looking forward to it, and it's probably feels like it's taken a long time to get here. A reminder that tickets are available for that at southsideflyers.com.au. All games broadcast live on KO as well, of course. Beck, best of luck with it all and the season beyond.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, guys.
Magnificent. Beck Cole there joining us, shooting guard for the championship side, the Southside Flyers, whose WNBL season tips off this weekend. Kingy, Beck was here for Chemist Warehouse. They are the real house of fragrance this Christmas. And remember, if you're struggling with back pain, now's the time for Keza. Open in Werribee and also Northcote. Well, there'd been a little bit of hype building around this young lady, but it went to the next level recently up in Dubbo at the Western Open, David King, where we found the 20-year-old Grace Kim playing in her first professional tournament on home soil. The Sydney Cider finished at 13 under to finish second to winner Daniel Gale. Turned heads all over the course. 5 birdies in succession to roar into contention on the second day. But it's what happens next that has Aussie golf fans so excited. And Grace Kim is here for a McCafe coffee catch-up. McCafe iced coffee. It's real coffee, real cold. Grace, welcome to SEN and thanks for your time.
Good morning. No, thank you for inviting me.
I've got to ask you about the Western Open up there in Dubbo. I mean, the achievement is amazing. I gather the self-confidence in you, you always thought you were capable, and in this occasion you mixed it with the men and you gave them plenty of their own medicine.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely had the extra advantage of a forward tee, but I'm glad that I was able to head neck on neck with Daniel Gale towards the end. So, it was a really good competition and I'm glad that I was able to perform well.
Tell us about your journey. Let's perhaps go back a little bit before we go forward. You know, where you grew up, when you discovered the game, who your idols were and what's got you to this point?
So I started around the age of 10 at Stratford Golf Club, and it honestly took me about 2 years to really understand and like the game. I really wanted to, you know, spend time with friends after school, but instead Dad took me to the range, so I was really upset. But now looking back, I'm quite glad that I've continued this path. My role models would be someone like Kari Webb. I understand, obviously, she's given back so much to junior female golfers. I want to be able to do the same with my success in the future. So
does Kari make contact? Because I've heard of her talking to the junior women coming through, as she's so supportive and not just with advice, but often some financial support and these sorts of things. Have you had that luxury yet, Grace?
I've had the luxury for the past 4 years. I was fortunate to win her scholarship for the past 4 years. And through that, I was able to grow a relationship, a friendship with her. So I've got her phone number on my phone and I'm still really stunned by it.
So what sort of things does she advise you on? Just sort of let us in a bit behind the scenes. How does she help you specifically?
Well, you know, she messages me here and there of like how I'm going and what I've been up to. And then when I'm in the US, whether I need a base or I need a contact or I need someone to talk to, she's always up for a phone call. So she's always there for advice.
Just before we leave Dubbo, if you don't mind, Grace, so you get a runner-up check at, I think, $5,300, which I imagine is makes a world of difference to you. But you also had a little side bet going on, didn't you, with the winner, Daniel Gale, a good mate of yours?
Yeah, so Daniel practices at Lynwood Country Club, and I head up there sometime as well. And there was, I think, I can't remember when exactly it was, but I think it was during COVID last year, we decided to play 9 holes, and I lost $20. And I'm pretty sure he bombed like a 30-footer to go one up. So I was really upset. But, yeah, he was like on the first tee at on the second round, why don't we do the $20 bet again? So I said, you know what, why not? And then I managed to get the $20 back, but he gained like just under $9,000. So it's nothing to him.
Yeah. Hey, Grace, where to from here? Because this is so exciting. Mm. And I guess you are getting swept away with it as well. What does the next 12 months or so look like for you? Because you've got to plan these things a long way out, given the travel commitments.
Yeah, so for this year, I've just got one more event in Melbourne, and then the start of next year would be the Aussie Summer. So I've got about five or more tournaments lined up. And then in March or April, I'll be heading back to the US as I gained conditional symmetra status. I'm not exactly sure how many tournaments I'll be able to get a start out of the 20 in their schedule, but I'm going to try get to top 10 by the end of the season and then hopefully get my LPGA card through that way.
Yeah, so the Symmetra, Grace, that's the official qualifying path, isn't it, for the LPGA Tour?
Yes, so it's the secondary tour.
Right, okay. So, wow, you're going to have some travel. Your whole life is about to change.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be able to have some international travels and domestic travels earlier in my junior and amateur career. You know, you learn as you go. I definitely had the opportunity to stay over in the US for 7.5 months this year as well. So all the learning curve, and I'm sort of ready for next year. So whatever comes my way, I'm really excited for.
Well, Peter Lonard was glowing in his praise. Yeah. He talked about your ball striking. Okay, off the tee, the boys were bombing them everywhere. But he talked about your iron play, particularly around the greens. Five birdies and an eagle on pro debut. He was glowing. What's the next step? What do you need to work on to go that next level, to break into the top bracket of women's golf?
So, I mean, nowadays everyone just hits it quite long, just having that extra bit of advantage of hitting it that, you know, a couple metres further and getting closer to the pin. I'm still quite lean and skinny. I've always been that way. And as a blessing, as a girl, I sort of struggle with fast metabolism. So I sort of find it hard to gain weight. Honestly, again, a blessing to as a girl, but just working in the gym, trying to get my muscles stronger and bigger, and swing speed. I've been using some super speed sticks to be able to gain extra speed. So just keep doing that, and yeah, just dialing in some putting.
What about the mental side of it all, Grace? You know, as the stakes get higher, the pressure gets higher, and everything gets cranked up a notch. What about the mental side of the game when the pressure's really at its dialed up to its maximum?
Yeah, I mean, I think no matter how good your game is, if your mind isn't there, you know, you're not going to succeed as much as well as you wanted to. So I'm definitely going to try and, you know, read more books on about mentality and getting stronger, read more biographies, or even see a psychologist. I haven't really actually seen a psychologist myself. Through Golf New South Wales High Performance Squad, we were quite fortunate to have a couple of sessions with John Novak as well, and my coach Khan's always been there to be able to push me forward. Even during the second round, I was birdie free for 8 holes, and then he told me to keep my head up and keep grinding and not, you know, shrug my shoulders and just keep fighting. And from then on, I made 5 birdies in a row. So things like that, you know, I just need little reminders to tell myself.
Things can happen quickly in golf, can't they? Look, I just wonder, Grace, if you've got any advice for Sam. He played in a golf weekend a fortnight ago.
You're not.
He's playing off a handicap of 54 at the moment. That's correct, 54. Do you have any advice for him, Grace?
Sam, just keep up the good work.
Oh, Grace. I can hear you're genuinely stunned by that. Thanks for treating me with kid gloves there, Grace. Appreciate that.
You would have Grace, you would have shot closer to 54 than have a handicap of 54.
Oh, my goodness.
You just had to, didn't you, Kingy? Hey, Grace, glad we give you a little chuckle this morning at my expense. And in all seriousness, though, congratulations for everything you've achieved so far. And the path you're on is so exciting. It's great to get you, I think, ahead of time, because I think we all know big things are in store for you. So best luck in what is a massive year ahead for you overseas. And we really appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate your time too. Thank you.
Go well.
Grace Kim there, doesn't she handle herself well? Even
star.
Even when thrown with ridiculous curveballs from you. And you just had to, didn't you? The texts that are coming through, ask her.
There's half a dozen texts coming through.
Ridiculous we bother her with that rubbish.
Has she got any advice for you?
How humiliating.
54.
How humiliating.